welcome to podcast number 4 in Failing Better, a series of inspirational conversations about failure. I'm Leila Darrenville.
I'm Caroline Pierce.
And today we have Paul James with us. Paul, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yes, I've been working at the Live Theatre a long time. In fact, I'm in my 21st year. Started the Youth Theatre in 1998, and I'm now the senior creative associate. I suppose that's because I'm getting older now. Anything with senior in there means you're getting older. So yes, I'm the senior creative associate, responsible for developing fresh partnerships with the education and children and young people's department, looking after the freelance workers, and keeping an eye on the quality of the work that we do.
Would you be able to talk us through just a real brief thing about what Live Theatre is?
Yeah, Live Theatre is a new writing company based on the Quayside in Newcastle. I think we're one of the 6 new writing companies in the country. We do work that has a resonance for the region, but also work that has a universal relevance as well. The company's been going since 1973, I think the original idea was to sort of produce work for non-traditional venues. So in the early days, the company used to go out to work in men's clubs, could be shows in parks, shows in schools. It was about increasing accessibility and about finding not working with non-traditional audiences.
Is it worth within that as well, because it's part of a lot of your work is based around the youth theatre and what the sort of relevance of the youth theatre in this region's been too? Just to say a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think when I knew youth theatre existed in the region before I took on the post. And I knew a lot of that was disseminated by Margaret Thatcher in the 80s. And in the 90s, when I started in 1998, there was a sort of increased interest, and I know Max Roberts was very keen to restart the whole idea of youth theatre again, because I know he was involved in youth theatre in the 80s. And we started a youth theatre, and very much following the same values as the theatre company itself.
So one of the first questions that we usually start the podcast with is, at what point, or has there been a point, when you realised that failure was something that was important to think about, to talk about, or that sort of felt like it had particular resonance with you?
It's kind of funny, it makes me laugh. I said to my son the other day, I said, oh yes, I'm doing a podcast about failure, and he says, Dad, you're being typecast. So I had to laugh at that. But in a way, it's interesting that he says that, because I've been working in this industry, theatre, for about 30 years now. I started when I was 22 as an actor, and I worked as an actor for 13 years. And the whole notion of failure, as far as I'm concerned, is sort of embedded into the profession. Will I get called for an audition? Will I get an audition? If I get an audition, will I get it? If I'm successful at the audition, I get the job. Will I be any good at the job? Will they like me? Will they invite me back? And after that job's finished, will I get another job? So failure is completely embedded into the profession itself. And also, moving on to a director in 1998, it's the same thing. Will this show be any good? Will I be able to do it? Will the young people look good? What will people say about it? And that is kind of part of the business, but I suppose you have to find your own way of dealing with that. So yeah, I'm used to the notion of failure, because I think it's part of the business we do. And sometimes there's not enough room for failure within the work we do, which I think is a great shame.
So do you think there's a difference with how you approached failure when you were younger? Because you talked about when you first started in the business and that kind of way of approaching failure, to how maybe you look at it now.
I think, for me, the way I deal with the notion of failure is by making sure I have a network of people that matters to me and who are there to support me, who are there that I can talk to when I'm in trouble or when I'm feeling the pressure. That's really, really important. If I was just doing this just for me, then I think I'd probably go mad. But I know, and I'm very lucky that I've got a family there who's there. I've got good friends who are there if I need to talk to them. And it's them that sort of gives me the strength to sort of to do the job that I'm employed to do. I would, as I said, I would just hate to be totally by myself in this because it could be very lonely in my head.
Have you got any stories, funny stories or important stories of things that have failed?
I think it's kind of, I've been quite lucky. I think for me it's more about the fear of failure, which has always been the sort of thing that has affected me. So when I first got this job in 1998, it was a massively well-funded youth theatre. The Granada Media Group were involved. Robson Green's Coastal Productions was involved. We got money from Europe. We got money from the Arts Council. A huge, huge budget. I'd never done anything like that before because I was a jobbing actor. And all of a sudden to find myself in a management position running something that's new for the region was very scary. And there was a sense of me that, you know, I'm a black artist working in the art in the region. I'm kind of, for me, representing other black young people in the region. I'm also representing, you know, the white young people in the region. And I just felt, I can't fail this, this has to work. And that put a hell of a lot of pressure on me. Whether that pressure was something self-imposed, I'm not quite sure. But all I knew at that time is that I have to make it work. I didn't want it to fail. So I worked really, really, really hard to make it work. And lucky enough, it did work and we're still here 21 years later. But that wasn't without a lot of stress and a lot of worry and a lot of self-doubt, which is all part of the artist's life, I suppose. Because I think sometimes the fear of failure propels you to move forward. And it's just like that feeling you get when you're doing a show, you know what I mean? Go, oh yes, right, the curtain goes up in a few minutes, will I be able to do this? Yes, but, you know, you take a deep breath and you push forward and something takes over. Mm-hmm. And I think that training as an actor for so long has helped me to deal with really pressurized situations. You know, it's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. And I've just got to keep myself calm and able to make it happen. So the tension's there and I'm holding the tension in my gut. But I try to use that sort of that tension to a positive end, like you have to when you're acting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You need that fear in you. But when you go on, you've got to look really relaxed. And that's been a great help to me in the job that I'm doing.
Like, do you feel that fear escape all at once?
I think when I'm working as a director, I think that fear is kind of running all the way through. You know, is it going to work? Am I going to embarrass these young people? Am I going to expose them? Are people going to think it's rubbish what I've done? So all the way through the process. But there reaches a point when you just have to just put that to the side. And you just have to just concentrate on what's happening in that rehearsal room. And I think with acting, there's that kind of, that burning fear is always in your gut anyway. You can't get rid of that. That's always there. That's always going to be there. But that's something that propels you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that, and if I don't have that, even though I'd rather not have it when mm-hmm. I was an actor, but if you don't have that, then it's worrying. Mm-hmm. You need that kind of fire in your belly, that slight bit of fear, but you have to be able to find a way to control that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's always been the sort of the fear of failure, which I think is probably more painful in a way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, is this going to work? Is this not going to work? And you just kind of just hope that it does work. But as I said, if you've got a solid infrastructure behind you, people who care, who can listen to you, mm-hmm. That really, really, really helps. And I don't know what it'd be like if I didn't have those people then. It could be a partner, it could be your kids, it could be friends, It's just knowing that they're there. And at the end of the day, they're what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to get it into perspective. And what I've learned, because I think in 2007 I sort of acquired a disability, is then that made me look at failure in a completely different way. Because I'm just glad to be alive.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking, well, I'm just doing a play.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real, you know. It's the living truth under imaginary circumstances, but it's not real. And if I fail, no one's going to beat me up.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to lock me away, you know. And it just took away a lot of stress because I had to look at life differently, you know. So going to the rehearsal room, and some of my most successful shows, I think, was when I sort of acquired the disability.
Okay.
You know, because I just kind of looked at it differently. I was a lot more relaxed about it.
So the fear, so the adrenaline was still there, but maybe that sort of like fear of doing it.
Yeah.
Was slightly further removed from the
process.
Absolutely.
And also I was thinking, well, so what if I do fail?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter. So the sort of, the determination to make it work was there, but I just didn't, I stopped worrying about failure and had more fun in the rehearsal room as a result.
So you've talked a bit about the young people that you work with as well, and I wonder whether some of that's rubbed off on them too, like when you've changed, when you've shifted slightly, because my question was going to be before that, if you were a young person within your theatre company and you did a show that was perceived a failure, how would you as director support those young people, and would, you know, how would that process feel for the, how would you want that process to feel for that young person? Because I guess you want them to be supported through it, but also appreciate that it's part of being an actor, that sometimes you do fail, sometimes whether it's that actually the show you're in is not great, whether you're not great as an actor in that particular show, or whether you fall on your face on the stage, which, you know, that happens too, or
yeah,
you forget your lines or something happens that you can't control. So yeah, how would you help young people to feel, or how have you helped young people to feel?
I just think it's kind
deal
of,
with it.
I make sure that I prepare the young people really well. I'll never put a group of young people on there not knowing what they do. So by the time we're at a stage where we're running the play, I get a good measure on what they think about it. And that's my gauge. If the young people are engaged and if they're having a good time and they can't wait to get it up there, and if they get it up there and they're doing well, they're the first to let you know. So I take my sort of guidance from them, really. Because you can tell, and if you're putting young people in a space where they're feeling insecure, that's when I failed.
Yeah.
They should be out there feeling really confident and ready to go. And obviously they're gonna have the nerves there, but that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You need that, you know. And if they do fail, if we fail, then it's always my responsibility. So I'm always watching the room, making sure that the young people are comfortable. I don't waste time in the rehearsal room. I make sure that they're so well prepared. So when they get up there, they're just ready to go.
And actually, it was interesting because you talked about how they felt. So actually, maybe even if there was, you know, critically, it wasn't a raging success. Actually, if they felt engaged and part of a team and they felt part of the process, then that's, that is a success, really.
Completely.
Because that's what you're wanting
completely
to happen.
Yeah, and you know, and I think the product is a sort of, it's a celebration of the process.
Yeah.
You know, and if that process is well and the kids have learned things, and I'm working with them in the same way I work with professionals, you know, making sure that they're prepared, making sure that we dissect the script, making sure that we understand the script, making sure we know what we're doing. It's my job to make sure that they're really well prepared, and I will sort of make sure that happens. You know, and I always check in with them to make sure that they're okay, to making sure that they're getting it, and to making sure that they feel confident with it. You know, and it's different strokes for different folks, because young people are different,
mm,
and they require, each one of them require a different approach. You know, but I would never show any panic in a rehearsal room. There'd be no panic, because I think it's like
never any panic.
That panic takes
Swan-like.
A Yeah, no, that panic takes place at home. I don't ever show that. It's always got to be really sort of relaxed. Because, you know, the rehearsal room has to be a creative space. It's got to be a space where young people can take risks and and be creative. And if you create blocks for that by, you know, a culture of fear, nothing's going to happen. And I have worked with other sort of youth theatre directors, not here, but when we've coupled up with other ones where it's just been a nightmare because the director's just been really hard on particular young people because they're not getting it. And then you just seeing them withdrawing and withdrawing and scared to try anything, you know. And that's what I would be like as a professional actor, you know, if people were really, I mean, it works two ways. You either really push it and really, you know, act like you're confident, or you just kind of just do what they want you to do. And for me, it's like a creative process. It's like working, it's ideas from the floor, it's ideas from the director, and together you create the baby.
It's really interesting. I'm really interested in the way that you're talking about your training, your acting training, and sort of where you've come from through that route. And I know I've talked to my mum about it a lot, and for the podcast my mum's also an actor who's worked with Paul over the years, and yeah, that kind of that basis. And we've talked a little bit about in other podcasts, haven't we, about how if you can support young people to feel confident with risk taking and feel confident with that fear, that actually the failure bit of it's kind of not important, or it is important because you learn from it, but it's like creating that space where actually that's the process you go through. You don't go through the process, hit failure and then sink to the bottom. You go through the process, and if you do hit failure, you learn from it and you pick yourself up and you rise
absolutely,
beyond it.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's just interesting you talking about that.
It's a complete learning process, you know. And I might have, you know, even if a show's successful, there might have been little failures that I thought, I just didn't approach that one right, or I might have done that thing differently, you know, but it's all a learning process, you know, and I think, and that's, you know, never see, you know, it's like if you don't get a job as an actor because, you know, it's not a reflection on you, you have to have your tools to deal with that, because I know some people take it really, personally, I must be crap because I didn't get that job and all the rest of it. It's not about that. You've got to find a way of dealing with rejection, which there's a lot of rejection, and I really sort of respect actors for that. And you have to find a way of building yourself up after that. So it could be as simple as saying, well, I wasn't right for that part.
Yeah.
You know, rather than I was shit, I wasn't very good.
Well, that part wasn't right for me.
Yeah, that part wasn't right for me, you know. And also, and then what you usually find, you know, further down the road, you actually understand why you didn't get that job, because you got this job.
Yeah.
And this job's better.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting from a freelance point of view, from a producer side of things, that's quite... Because there's been jobs that I've got that I shouldn't have got, which actually I'm not very good at. And that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, isn't it? If that role isn't right for you, that means that if you are put into that role, then it doesn't gel. You don't become that person.
Yeah,
and it becomes something that's not actually that great.
Completely.
And that, I guess, translates into lots of other places.
Absolutely.
You end up doing the things that you're really good at because they're the things that you get.
You feel secure in.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, you can challenge yourself, but challenge yourself in the right way to move on and to grow and get better.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's like when I got the job to run the youth theatre, it was just like, that was totally out of my comfort zone. I've never done, I'm usually just put a costume on and do the show, you know what I mean? But all of a sudden you found yourself with so many different responsibilities. You know, if you're directing a show with 20 young people in it, you know, that's 20 young people. Then you've got your designers to be talking to, your sound designers, your musicians, you've got a whole range of people who you're actually moving around, and you know, and you've got to stay calm, because as soon as you start kicking off, then it creates a virus.
So you say all of a sudden, but I don't imagine that it was like magicked upon you, that role. But did you have an aspiration to do that sort of work in your future? Or at the point that it was advertised, was that the first time that you thought of changing from like jobbing actor?
I was quite lucky with my acting, because I worked solidly 9 months in a year, but, you know, doing, you know, all sorts of work, from working in theatre and education, from working in big theatres, doing Shakespeare, from doing touring shows. I was very lucky. I had a complete taste of it all, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I'm trying to remember what your question was again, Caroline.
Well, I think I noticed a couple of times that you'd said about what when you came into this role that referred to it as all of a sudden things have changed. And I just wondered, because I don't imagine that it, I'm sure they changed all of a sudden, but I don't think it happened to you, that you had some agency in making that change. And I just wondered if you've got any reflections on how that...
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I think when the job came up, I was doing a project. I was asked by Jane Tarr, who was the general manager here, to, you know, if I'd like to develop some work with some Asian boys. Well, it was an Asian group at first with girls, but then the boys frightened off the girls, so I was just left with six. I was left with seven boys, and then we devised something over a few weeks, and it was sponsored by Greggs, which is great, and we did something. We did a little presentation in the studio, and it's about their experience of living in the West End. So we did that, we invited people to do it. The boys are very difficult, it was very challenging. And then on the back of that, Shane said to me, oh, we've got this job coming up, and it'd be really good if you applied.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of thinking, and I was really worried about it, because I was thinking, is this where I really want to go? Because the acting was okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, work was coming in, I was getting work. And then all of a sudden moving from that sort of insecurity to a secure to security. And the job was initially funded here for 3 years. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I shall do it for 3 years and then I'll go back to acting. So in a way it just appeared,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I was encouraged and then Max was very keen for me to apply. And all of a sudden there's a lot of pressure for me to apply. And I was thinking, well, what is going on here? You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I know how directors work because I've worked with so many different directors, so I was able to make a piece of them, you know, so I was able to sort of remember what's good about them, what didn't work about them. But I just thought it sort of as an opportunity, and I thought, okay, we'll just do it for a few years then and just see what happens. And I went for it, and then after quite a long, winded interview, I got the job, which I was surprised at. And then once you get the job, then there's the fear, and then there's the fear of failure. But lucky enough, I had some great people working around me and supporting me. And we went on beyond that 3 years, and then the Arts Council said that this project must go on, and then it became an integral artistic arm of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So we did okay. But yeah, but the stress was just, it was a lot of stress, and I don't know how people close to me coped with me in those days. But it's that fear of failure that propels you. You know,
yeah.
That's what made me say, right, I've got to do this. I've got to make this show okay. I've got to make this right. I've got to commission these writers. I've got to do all this work. I started at the beginning of August 98, and within 2 weeks I had to launch the youth theatre, I had to produce a show, so it's just like straight into it. You're doing live TV, talking about this amazing thing, and I was thinking, oh my god. And I remember my former partner dropped me off here, and I saw these live things outside waiting to interview me about the youth theatre. I was thinking, all the things I don't like to do. This is just a nightmare. The show opens tonight and I just can't bear this. This is, now I've got to do a live interview with Pat Royal, and it's just like, how much more pressure are you going to add? But somehow you just get through it.
Mm.
And again, as I said, it's that acting thing of kind of just, right, okay, just preparing yourself, ready to do this, and treat it as a gig.
It's really amazing though, isn't it? Because I don't think I know any single person who could have ever envisaged anybody else in your role other than you. And then if you look at the success of the youth theatre and the sort of people who've come out of the youth theatre, you know, the actors, the real amazing quality actors who've come out of that youth theatre, and who still feel very connected to you and to live theatre,
yeah.
It's quite special actually to have had that kind of legacy?
It's just, yeah, I just, but it's funny though, you don't have time to think about all that, about, you know.
Well, not when you're thinking in 3-year blocks, you
know. Yeah,
don't.
Not when you're planning your life away, you're thinking, okay, what do I do for the next 3 years? Oh my gosh, I've got to make an application to the Arts Council about, you know, how do we keep it going or what we're going to do. So you just don't have a lot of time to stop and reflect on the successes. And, you know, and you get lots of people coming up to me saying, you know, God, you should be really proud of, you know, your Aunt Fanny's, or you should be proud of the actors on Amadeus. What you've achieved has just been incredible. And even if they're not doing theatre, whatever they're doing, you know, but I've just not had time to do it. But every now and again, it could be through Facebook, you do get a little message from them asking how you are. And sometimes I meet them up and have a cup of coffee, and you just think, my God, really? And they tell you that you've made such an impact, and you just think, have I really? You know what I mean? I'm always quite surprised by it, you know?
Just the other day when I was in here, there was a teacher, wasn't there? There was a drama teacher of somebody's child.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Was it Claire's child's drama teacher, yeah, or something, who'd been part of the youth theatre and now
completely.
She's teaching other children.
And you just don't know what impact you're having, because we have to keep thinking about what's next, or okay, what's the next project, you know? And it's obviously had a massive impact on people's lives. And I feel really sort of privileged to be working. So I've got the job here, really, and mm-hmm. to be working with some really amazing young people, and they're fantastic young people. I've learned loads from them, you know. It's been a joy, and obviously there's been challenges, there's been lots of changes, and frustrations, but I feel really sort of privileged to have had so long here, you know, almost 22 years, it's great.
There's something really amazing about the longevity and the consistency, and that actually when you and the building are consistent, that is a real opportunity for people to send comments potentially 22 years
yeah.
and 3 minutes
yeah.
and to have a really long-term look at what the impact can be.
Completely. And it's funny because I saw someone the other day, and I can't remember her name. I remember the name of that. Then she says, "God, you even remember my name?" Quite surprised. I says, "Yes, because we shared a moment together, and that moment is like doing a show, and you know, you become like family for 3 months, really working at it. You know what I mean? You don't forget them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they've taught me. There's times when I've been in trouble, panicking, and the young person might come up with a simple solution that I've not thought about. Just thought, thank God you've saved it. That's another job, another year in the job.
Yeah.
But, you know, so yeah, it's a kind of a two-way thing.
And are there any like stories of things that young people have taught you that are translatable that you'd share, or is it more in the moment in that context?
I just remember devising many many shows, you know, where you're just starting a show from scratch, where you've had to sort of let a writer go because they weren't delivering. And then all of a sudden, we've still got a date to perform. The same group of young people, we've got a date to perform, do something. And we have to sit down and decide, what do we want to do? Because we've got to do something. But it didn't work out with this writer because he wasn't quite getting it. And then, you know, I remember at the time we did a show about the Love Parade and all that, which was a big music festival that was meant to be happening here in the 90s, I think. But it didn't happen because of objections from the local community. They didn't want something like that, and they had all these ideas of young people being drunk and spewing up all over the place and making the place a mess, mainly from the Jesmyn contingency, I must say, and people in Newcastle Council at the time. And the young people thought it'd be a really good idea to do a piece about that. So we started devising, and it was increasingly becoming a piece of political theatre where they're playing the people in Jesmyn, where they're playing people from Newcastle City Council, and we sort of devised this 25 minutes piece of political theatre. And I just remember wasn't quite sure how to end this piece, and we need to find the ending for it. And then one young person just came up with it. You know, this is like the 2 days before we went up. I think I was knackered by this whole process. And the young person just came up with a simple solution, and then we found the ending. And I just thought, thank you, mate. I've been sweating for days with this, and he just came up with it just like that. And I just, and it's amazing how sometimes they can, we can save each other, and that's what they did.
And that's exactly what you were saying at the start, actually, that the support networks, whoever they are, wherever you find them, that's the safety
net. I think that's the key. That's the key. And you need that in this business, because it's such a tough and competitive business. And I've got a son now who's actually involved in the industry and really interested. I tried to put him off.
Oh, my mum did the same to me. She made me do science as well.
You just don't want to put him through it. It's not great for your mental health. And, you know, and then he's kind of going for auditions and he's being sort of rejected. And all I have to do is try and make sure I sort of give him a sense of resilience and make him see that actually that is part of the business.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it is, it's that, like you say, it's that support network. It's like failing as a team or succeeding as a team. Whichever way you want to look at it, because it's the same, you know, it's different sides of the same coin, isn't it? That you, if you do it together, if you do something together, whether that's in a rehearsal room or whether that's as a network of people, professionally or personally or whatever, you can do it together and it feels a lot better.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And as soon as you feel alone, that's when it drags you.
Yeah, I couldn't cope, you know. I've had times in my head, you know, almost like, help me, I don't know how to get through this. And then everyone in my household saying, what state I'm in, trying to... And you just kind of think, oh my God. But the outside world, they don't see that, you know what I mean? Because again, I'm really careful about presenting the image out there that is like really positive. And, you know, I mean, I keep those things, to the network, to my support structures. It's been challenging, and I've had to make some sort of challenging decisions, but it's been great. I've just learned so much, and all funded through the Arts Council. Fantastic. It's amazing. What a training. I've been really sort of lucky, you know, and I've sort of been really lucky working here at Live, where, you know, and working with some really talented people and learning absolutely loads.
And I think everybody who's been involved in that would say that they've been really lucky to, you know, the investment's been worth it. It's not, you know, there's definitely been a return on it.
I think so. And I feel really fortunate that that is the case. And many young people see it that way. No matter what they're doing, they never forget their time here, you know. And you don't know where those young people are coming from or what their backgrounds are, you know. And that's another thing. Somebody wrote to us, last year, celebrate our 21st birthday. And she was talking about, you know, she came as a working class girl to the youth theatre and having problems at home and the challenges of you know, having to get here and not being able to afford to get here, but somehow she made it, and how important a community it was for her at some very challenging times. And you just kind of think, I didn't know that, you know. So you're just having, you know, and she now runs her own charity and she's obviously doing very, very well, but she's always sort of sees her experience with the youth as very, very positive, you know. And I guess because I came from a sort of background where theatre didn't make sense, I remember, because I was brought up by my mother and three boys. Yes, we come from a work, you know, it's a working class background, council estate, all those kind of things, free school meals, all that. Actually, my movement into theatre didn't look likely. And when I was say to teachers, you know, I'd like to be an actor, they say, be realistic, Paul. Not with that accent, because obviously I'm a Bristolian, so I suppose in those days it was a bit more oar. But you know, but it's just like you didn't get any sort of encouragement. And I remember when I got my degree, I said to my mum, oh, mum, I've got a Bachelor of Arts. She says, but Paul, you can't draw. And I just thought, God, my God, you know what I mean? Because, you know, her culture is so different. Didn't get it at all, but you can't draw, Paul. I thought, oh my gosh. You know, so it was like those challenges, and I suppose it's those challenges that sort of, and you know, I'm not saying that my upbringing was awful, it was great. I had a lucky, despite all that, great, you know, my mother was always there, and that, you know, and I felt really fortunate. But it's kind of influenced the way I look at theatre, the way I look at accessibility, and how I am aware of those sort of barriers that are there that blocks many young people from doing it. And so I feel quite sad at the moment that, you know, we're having a debate about class and theatre and the fact that most of the sort of positions are kind of, you know, it's very middle class domain, which is very sad. And I think we, and I'm so pleased that there's been sort of moves to sort of readdress that balance and to look at diversity in the wider sense, because it's a human right.
Yeah, that was really amazing. So we usually finish on a little bit of a lighter note. What did you fail at this week? Should I give mine?
Yeah, give yours first, let me think about it.
Oh, I did something really stupid. Like, I'd, you know, when you just don't check something, and I thought something was happening on one day and it wasn't, and I'd like sort of gone, oh yeah, it's happening on Friday, and it wasn't, it was happening on Wednesday, and it was Wednesday that day, and I'd missed it. And it was all right, it was totally okay, but it was totally me failing, because I'd written something down in the wrong place. Mm. I'd put it in my diary, I'd written it down, it was all there, that's all great, amazing.
Yeah.
And I did the whole thing, oh yeah, that's happening on Friday. No, it's not, it's today. And now, right now, and I'm not there.
What did I fail? I suppose I've sort of given up smoking proper cigarettes, and now I'm on the vape, and I've been for about 3 years. And I think last week I failed my vape, and I said to someone, can I have a cigarette, please? So I feel like I failed with that, but every now and again, it just has to be done. But so yeah, I failed at that. I had a cigarette.
Can I just say well done for not having a cigarette for 3 years?
Yeah.
Because that's quite a big...
Well, I'm not saying that I'm not. I think it's like I would have the odd one.
Like, well done for not smoking regularly for 3 years.
Yeah, no, absolutely no. Absolutely no. I try not. It doesn't go terribly well with my health, so I try not to do that.
Feels like
every now and again, you just think, I need something stronger. It's either a gin or a cigarette. So, or both. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Caroline, what was yours?
I think that I'm playing my Joker card, and we haven't discussed having a Joker card, but I've failed to think of something that I've failed at. And I feel like that I'm allowed to use it, but I'm only allowed to use it once.
Yeah,
I'm sure I have failed at stuff, but I can't think of anything at the moment.
Yeah. Fantastic. I don't really like that term, failure. It's interesting, isn't it? I just try not to, because I found that quite hard to ask, because I don't entertain it.
Mm-hmm.
I try to stay really sort of positive, and it's very, very, because as I said earlier, every sort of, as my mum used to say, every disappointment is for a good.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and we've talked about this a bit, and I know we're sort of coming to the end now, but it's probably worth saying that I've approached somebody and been like, oh, do you want to be part of our podcast, and it's all on failure, blah, 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 but not explained that me and Caroline see failure in a really positive place. So
yeah,
we see it as being something that's like a positive thing to talk about, and it's about learning, and it's about all of those things. So I've like sort of lolloped into a conversation about failure without explaining and contextualising that actually we mean it in a positive way.
Yeah, you have to take it that way. You just have to. You can't kind of have, you know, live with a grudge bag all the time. You know what I mean? I kind of just learn from it and then move on. Yes, it hurts for a while, but then you just have to move forward. So yeah, it's very, because my son always says to me, you know, because I've got this disability now, and he says, Dad, you're always so positive, it's so annoying. And you just kind of think, actually, that's quite unwinning. That's what I want him to say, rather than you're so miserable, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what gets me through life. It's just like, just being positive. And hope that positivity rubs off on other people.
Well, that's a lovely point to end on,
isn't it?
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.